Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Almost the End of Feasley. My name is Mark Sermon. You can read it there on the slide. And I'm from Mozilla. And I have one of the most awesome jobs in the world, which a bunch of these other people in blue jackets also have, which is I get to wake every day up and love the web. That's what I get paid to do. I know it's hard to believe. Although we do that at Mozilla in a very specific way. And, you know, I love a lot of things about the web. I really, really love animated GIFs, which you'll learn about in this. I love that this is the kind of world we live in, that people can make shit like this. It goes all around the world. But I also, this is a Bluetooth thing, doesn't go very far. I also just love the material of the web and the internet that we've built in the last 30 years. And this is a picture, actually, I think probably about 20 years old, of network nodes across the internet. And I love all of those things in between, the frivolity, but also the wonder of this thing that we've created, which is the internet and the web. So I want to talk about those things today, and I want to talk about them from three perspectives. One, I want to talk about that love, a little bit of my personal love affair with the web, but also, I think, why we all care about it, and some of the things we want to protect and grow about it. I want to talk about the empowerment that has come and can come from that in terms of all of humanity having a much bigger ability to tap their creative, innovative, and human potential that the web brings to us. But first, I want to talk about power. And I want to talk about some of the tensions of power as we create something like the web and like the internet, and how easy it is to lose potentially the things that we love about it. So that's what I'm going to talk about first, is I'm going to talk about power and just tell a little bit of a history lesson, actually, about Mozilla and the web along the way. And by the way, just in case you thought you were going to leave halfway through, before I get into this first section about power, we are going to announce the winners of the Firefox OS hackathon and give out a Firefox OS phone at the end of this. So don't leave. There'll be a very special guest also helping with that. So, back to the show. And the guest that's coming does not look like that, is not in a costume. So, first, a talk about power. How we almost lost the web. So, how many people here were alive in 2003? Okay, how many people were already using a computer in 2003? There's not that many really young people. How many people already graduated high school in 2003? Like, almost nobody. Okay, I'm a very old man. Just Guillermo and me. And so you might remember some of these things or not, but 2003 was actually a dark year. This is the Space Shuttle Challenger. Huge catastrophe blows up before leaving the atmosphere. And there was actually, I guess, another space disaster in Brazil that year in a test launch here that I remember hearing about. So very sad year for innovation. And I don't know if people remember, especially all you people didn't graduate high school, there was a global health crisis called SARS. People couldn't move around on airplanes. You know, very, very scary for people. But scariest of all, 2003, everybody was using Internet Explorer. Everybody, or 98% of people. There was still some people on Netscape. There was the emerging Mozilla open source project, although it wasn't called Firefox yet by 2003. But it was the year that Mozilla Foundation starts, and that we actually begin to move from the original Mozilla suite in the direction of Firefox. But at that moment, it was quite a dark period for the web. You know, it wasn't just that we all were able to only see the web through Microsoft's eyes, which is true, but also what the web could do was kind of crappy compared to today. I don't know if, you know, all you young people were not using email at that point yet, but, you know, this is what webmail used to look like. And, you know, how many people here, okay, I know at Feasley it's embarrassing to answer this question, yes, but how many people here use Gmail? So kind of a few people. So as much as I hate Gmail, it's a nice interface. It works well. This is what webmail was like in 2003. Reload, 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 reload. It was horrible, right? And most web apps were like that. We didn't have the modern web app in 2003. But more importantly, and I don't know if you can read this, but this says online application is only available for Internet Explorer. And how many people remember seeing that on the screen from time to time? How many people have seen that in the last week? Right. So some things have changed and were different in 2003. And what is very specifically bad about that, and we actually see it again today a little bit with things like CSS extensions in Chrome, but Microsoft was using its monopoly to try to shape the direction that the core programming languages of the web were going, to make the web its own and for no one else, and also to really push ActiveX and other things where they controlled how we make the web, not just how we see the web. So that was 2003, and it's different than today. One way it's different is, as I said, Microsoft was the monopoly. So this is a market share chart of 2003, and the blue is Internet Explorer. And the green and the other colors are different things, Leftover, Mosaic, and Netscape, and early Mozilla, and various things. But basically, it had no competition, so Microsoft could control the web and try to take it where it wanted. And worse than that, it actually didn't give a shit. It didn't think the web was going anywhere. It thought that Windows was going to continue to be the platform for everything. So this is 2009. It actually even looks better now in 2013. And it is funny, yes, it does look like a Firefox, but it's real data. And so by the time you get to 2009, Firefox has got about 25% of the market share of web browsers. You're starting to see Chrome emerge and Safari, and now we have a really good situation where IE is less than 50%, which doesn't matter. I mean, it matters if you hate Microsoft. I don't spend much time doing that these days. What is interesting about it is HTML5 is way more than 50% because we pushed Microsoft there. But the idea that there's choice and the idea that there is one set of programming languages and tools for the web is very different than where things were in 2003. One set of tools, HTML5, that is controlled by no individual vendor. And so how did we get there? I mean, of course, Mozilla is not the only factor in getting there. But Mozilla was a significant part of that, and we were lucky, and there were a few people well before my time who were very smart. How did we get there? Well, we get there because Mozilla is not just people like me who are paid to work for Mozilla. Mozilla is tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people who are out there building what we do, installing Firefox, evangelizing what we do all the time. Mozilla truly is a community effort. Even if you see us as big and potentially slicker than other open source projects, it still is very community driven. And so this is a breakdown of some different kinds of ways that people contribute, from code to nightly testing to evangelizing to just going and installing Firefox on other people's computers. This is the way, with almost no marketing budget, a foundation that started out in 2003 as 10 employees took back the web and beat one of the biggest software companies in the world. With this, not with the people who are in Mountain View or the people who are paid to work for Mozilla. And this is a picture of the last Mozilla summit that happened in Whistler in 2010. There's about 600 people, half volunteers, half staff, that make up our community. We're about to do our next one, which is going to be 2,000 people this October. But the heart of it really is the people who you might have met here. And like, put up your hand if you're wearing a blue sweater or not, if you're somehow involved in the Mozilla community in Brazil. I mean, all of these are people you should say thank you to and give them a round of applause. I want to. These are the people that helped beat Microsoft and bring the web back, really, truly. And so what are some things that they helped along with other people do? So what is this? I often give this talk to not technical audiences, but regular audiences. And people go, so what? You know, I used to have Internet Explorer, and then I had Firefox, now I have Chrome, so what? Well, some of the so what for regular people is, of the top websites and applications that you use every day, the only one that you probably still use today that was there already in 2003 is that. You know, you were probably using Yahoo Mail in 2003 and you're not anymore, or whatever Hotmail used to be called, or, you know, there wasn't most of what we use now, including all these things, whether you like them or not, the web didn't support the kind of rich experiences that you know, that we have today. And as much as I would like us to have open alternatives to all these, and we need to compete and break down the monopolies emerging from the new Microsofts, we also have a much richer experience of our digital lives because we can do so much on the web, and that's because people stood up for the web and stood up against Microsoft taking it down its own path. And of course, one of the most promising things is we now have the web as a rich programming environment, which as much as HTML5 is something constantly in change, we're able to do much more with the web. And again, we're able to do it with a set of building blocks owned by nobody other than the web itself. So I think that's a big achievement. And of course, you know, we get stuff like this as a result. We had a wonderful era of the beauty of MySpace pages, which I kind of miss. Facebook has sort of erased those. But also a huge for the everyday person burgeoning of culture. As a Canadian, I hate Justin Bieber, but I'm proud that he really was discovered by YouTube, which is a much more democratic talent pool than any other kind of method before it. And it also is inspiring to me personally in that this is my son who wants to be Justin Bieber. God help me if he does become. But you know, he doesn't have anybody between him and the audiences he's trying to find. And that's the thing also, more than the web stack, more than the programming languages, we have rebuilt and still have what was the original promise of the web in front of us right now, is that without permission from anyone, whatever I want to create, I can take it to the world. And so that's what I love about the web, is that permissionless ability to innovate, to create, and the kind of building blocks that are there. And this actually, my other son as well, this is quite normal picture in our house, is that we're not talking to each other, we're all three sitting on our laptop. Tristan on the left is the musician, and Ethan is just a goof. And so, you know, I want to talk a little bit about what I think is so important about the web, what is so important about that victory of Firefox. This is also very important for us to really keep in mind as we go into the next era, especially the era of most people experiencing the internet and the web through phones. And so I'm going to get Ethan. Oh, I hate it when the lights do this. You can't see the gray text. You'll figure it out. So it says up there, what's so special about the web? And so that's what I want to get Ethan, the younger son, to help me explain. I want him to help me explain that the web, as a metaphor, is made of Lego. And so there's Ethan. And Ethan loves Lego. He loves physical Lego, as trademarked and proprietary as it may be, although their patent has expired, so it's a more open product than in the past. But the idea of Lego, he just loves, that he can make anything, and that there are these modular blocks. But Ethan also loves the web. In fact, a lot of the stuff that I get excited about, I hear through my kids, and not, you know, I don't find through myself. So what does he love about the web? Well, he loves this kind of aspect of the web. You know, I'm sure I would have heard of Sci without him, but you know, I heard of Sci through him first. Daddy, have you seen this? I'm still talking. Oh, there you go. Sorry, the words got caught in there. It was just a little bit of buffering. So you know, this first time I saw Sci was through Ethan. But the cool thing that's different than when old people like me and Guillermo grew up is, you know, his mainstream culture isn't just Sci, which is kind of different than me growing up on. Thank you.
So that's think it's very much at risk. It's very much at risk because the next 2, 3, 4, 5 billion people who get on the internet will not, if things go the way that they're going now, get online using a technology that lets them look under the hood or see the Lego or hack it. They'll get on the line through this, and it's going to be another dark era for the digital world that we all live in. Now, we have a proposal on the table as one way to try to fix that, which is to make sure that the web is the platform for mobile and eventually, hopefully, for ubiquitous computing and whatever comes afterwards. It's a very early proposal, a very modest proposal, despite everybody having these Firefox OS jackets. Not very many people actually have these phones. And actually, if you ask me, I'm probably being recorded, but there's no press here, I think it won't even be necessarily the most important part of what happens to bring the web back on mobile. Because just like we are now in a world where Chrome and Safari and even IE9 are a part of the footprint of an open universal set of programming languages, effectively an operating system for the web, that has to happen in mobile too. Firefox OS at its best should be a wedge that opens us up to HTML5 being the way that all of the mobile world works. So that's, you know, one part of the proposal is we need to bring the platform back. And we all should do what we can to make that happen, and part of that is making the platform work for real everyday people, making excellent mobile experiences based purely on the web. And if anyone has ideas on how to do this, the biggest thing we're looking for is we also need to find ways to make the web better than the iPhone and Android as a way to do mobile. What is it that's different on the web? What's special about the web that can actually create value for people? But I think that would not be enough. It's not just enough if we get HTML5 to be the dominant environment for mobile. That's just the platform. For me, we also do need to get back to sort of where we got accidentally, where probably everybody here got somehow, probably many of us accidentally, which is that people who use the web, who use the digital world, know how it works and can shape it. And so we did a survey recently in the UK, because we do a lot of work in the UK on digital literacy, and 67% of British children age 8 to 15 say they want to know how to code, and their motivations are different, gaming, getting a job, whatever, and only 3% say they do. So there's a desire to have the other half of the scenario that I think we need. We need an open platform, which we're losing in mobile, but we need a citizenry that feels it owns the web and can shape it. And people, young people, want to be a part of that, but it's not clear how you get there. And so one of the things that we have just launched as a proposal, again, it's, you know, I think about both Firefox OS and WebMaker as proposals in some sense, is this idea called Mozilla WebMaker, which is really a tent for how can we find ways, just like Firefox is a mainstream product, just like Firefox OS wants to be a mainstream product, how can we find ways to take the mainstream experience every day of using the internet and teach hundreds of millions of people how it works? Not slowly through the classroom,
not didactically through kind of earnest government education programs, but all the time as people use the web, help them understand how it works. So the goal of Mozilla WebMaker, very nascent again, just a proposal, is to show everyone the Lego of the web using everyday internet culture. So I want to take a few minutes to explain what that might look like and then see what we can do to get everybody involved and then give out a phone. So by everyday culture, I really mean taking those two elements that I've talked about a lot, the kind of culture that is made of the internet, like Gangnam Style, like various remixes of it, the whole world we live in, like that awesome animated GIF of SpongeBob, and the culture of remix, and use them together. And so in its current incarnation, and it's going to change, I'm sure, WebMaker is really a place for people to post those kinds of materials that we all make and like on the web. And in some ways, if it were successful, and you can't really see this there today, it'll be a place that you can post materials from any different kind of HTML5 authoring tool that'll kind of collect the sort of stuff you see on Facebook or Twitter or I hesitate to say 4chan. But, you know, we'll collect things that people create on the web and we'll showcase them there. I guess in some ways, in many ways, like MySpace used to. And, you know, the kind of things you can imagine are just like silly little memes that people send around, or, you know, postcards. I made this postcard in HTML today, and actually I can fill in the other side and send it to my kids. Or movie posters, you know, that I might just want to kind of make for fun. So it's really just about that sort of stuff. And it's also videos, and it'll also be games, it'll also be apps. But it's any little piece of HTML5 that I made for fun, for something educational that I want to share with my friends. So at that level, WebMaker sounds like a kind of dinky version of Pinterest with Facebook mashed up with something else. But really, the secret of it is if we can get people using that to share and create things that they want to share and create, is every single object on there comes with a remix button. And so the idea is to start to build into a culture of social media and communication and creativity online that everything is HTML5, that everything is shared with a URL, and that everything you can look under the hood, just like in the Four Freedoms, and everything can be changed and remixed. And so this poster, which actually is just a kind of off-the-shelf HTML page poster that's there on webmaker.org, if I open it up and hit remix, I go into the HTML page, nothing computationally complicated about that, and probably, you know, far more painful to edit than lots of other ways I could edit it. But what it does is says, oh, I've gone in here to remix. Here's a bunch of things that I can do and learn with this page. So we intentionally make it a little bit harder than just editing something in Facebook, with the idea of exposing you to the fact that the world we live in is made of code. And what I did was I decided to go and modify that and quickly make a Fizzly poster, because that's what the remix button is for. So I just went in and changed who the characters were in the movie, including our good friends Tux, the Firefox, and the GNU. And if you could read that, you would see that it's made by Freedom Pictures, by the people of the web, and so on and so forth. So that's the idea, is really, it's a very early kernel of idea, to take the mainstream everyday experience of people playing and communicating and even doing serious stuff on the web, but make it very much of the web, make it something that's a conversation through remix, make it easy to build things that the web lends itself to building, and teach people how it works as we go. And that's the important part. Teach people how it works as we go. And so there's another set of tools inside of WebMaker called Popcorn, which are more about making videos. So basically, Popcorn lets you take any timeline, a sound file, a video file, and drag any other web element into the video. So in this one, I've like dragged animated GIFs of Gangnam Style into the Gangnam Style video. And then if I hit publish, all of a sudden, all that stuff from across the web, you know, I love that part, becomes a part of my video. And the point of it is to have fun in this case, but the point of it also is really, you know, the web is made up, you know, of all these little bits. And as we play with them and use them, we can have fun, but we also learn that that's, you know, that's the nature of the thing itself. So that's Popcorn. That's the Thimble HTML editor. There's a bunch of other tools that we're making, that others are making, that will give you that same WebMaker experience. And there's an API called the Make API, where anybody can publish into that pool as long as they have that same spirit. Making something with HTML5 that you're inviting people to remix. So watch that. Hopefully some good things will come of it. But of course, the question is, both those examples I gave you are very desktop-centric. If we want the next, let's say, few billion people to understand how the web works, if we think that it has to be more than just the platform, but we need people to be literate in this, what about mobile? How is that going to work? And can we take the radical democratization of creativity that we've seen with the web on desktop and have it happen again with mobile? Can the smartphone do the same? And I think if you look here, which is the Apple App Store, the answer is no. The answer is no because the bar for programming an app is high, and there are tools that try to get you to make it easier, but it's still high. It's still a very traditional development approach, which may be fine for everybody here, but is not going to get to the point where the average shop owner or the average school teacher can create or modify an app, which I believe actually is the world we need to live in. But more importantly, this store is one where Apple says you can publish or not publish. And so two things. The bar for participating in the mobile digital world as a creator of apps is incredibly high technically. I think that's important and something worth addressing with simpler tools. But also the bar for publishing is also high and narrow, in that two or three companies control who has permission to publish, which is dramatically different than the web. So I don't think that the smartphone on the current path is going to get us to the same point as the kind of creativity we've seen on the web. And we need to do Firefox OS, but we also need to have that same WebMaker approach in the mobile world. So we're trying to figure out how you do that. And we're trying to take the fact that with HTML5 on mobile, you can look under the hood. And that means that fairly instantly, you've got a live program that anyone who was given the tools and a little bit of help and a little bit of motivation can change small parts of, like just like I changed that movie poster. And that's actually something worth thinking about as building in as a common practice in the world of HTML5 mobile apps. And so we've started, Ben Moskowitz and Bobby Richter, Bobby will come up here and demo something in a second, to just in the last month start to say, okay, well, what would it look like? And this is pre-prototype stuff. What would it look like to start to do really constrained use cases that get people in the mobile world thinking about how to make an app, even if they're not a programmer? So this is one of the very first things we did a few weeks ago, and it's the Firefox OS boilerplate app. It's just a Thimble page, or it's just a text file that we're opening in that same editor that I changed the poster in. And the difference is there's basically a bunch of activities and APIs and functions that we've kind of pre-put in there. Is it with web components already or not yet? But which we'll be doing with web components, so there's bundles of stuff tied up there. But the more important thing is, it's basically a menu of shit I can do. And if I can edit a text file, I can turn it into something. So this was an experiment we did. And what I did was, I decided I wanted to make a pick to SMS app, so I just kept the pick an image, send by SMS, and there I had my thing that would take a photo and send it by SMS to somebody, because that was there. And it was easy because of the tooling that we have set up. Now, it's a little bit different if we were to put it in the professional app store, but a development version of the app store, we just threw that up by pasting a URL in somewhere, and all of a sudden I had my pick to SMS app on my Firefox phone, or on my simulator of a Firefox phone in this case. So that's the kind of thing that is really, really early. They would think, what would be some common functions people would want that is actually on your phone, we could just let you hack an app or make an app. There's a guy we work with called Forrest Oliphant, who also is interested in some similar stuff. And this is, again, a kind of a more desktop-based approach to it. But he's interested in how do you give people the ability to play with elements of media on the web and wire them up to do things and give them bits of logic. So this thing called Mimu lets you do that sort of wiring up. So the first kind of object I took was my camera, and I turned that on, and I took a picture of me. And then the next thing is I've actually got an animation function that I can plug into the camera. So I did that and took a bunch of pictures of me and ended up getting an animated gift. And then the next thing I did was make it so that mapped onto a canvas and then built a button where I could upload that to Imgur. And so this all took like less than a minute. And then I had the app that would get my animated GIFs up onto Imgur. And so a little bit less mobile-centric than what I just showed you, but kind of shows you, like, hey, here's a kind of way you don't think about programming that somebody might want to make an app around some media functions. And I'm proving, again, I love animated GIFs. And so what I want Bobby to come up and show before we kind of wrap some of this up is the next place for us to go, other than selling, you know, a billion phones and other than teaching everybody HTML, is to find out a way to make it easy and democratic again for people to be able to make apps. And so we've taken that first kind of thimble or that text experiment that we talked about for mobile and this one that is there in Mimu and wired them together in something which is a kind of very proto app maker. So in this case, a very narrow use case way to build animated image apps on your phone or those media apps on your phone with your phone as the actual authoring environment for the app. So Bobby, do you want to come and show what you're going to show? Do you want me to hold the mic for you?
This one might work.
Does that work?
Does this mic work? Yes. No.
Here, I'll just...
Okay. So, hello, everyone. We're going to attempt something pretty fun. I'm going to try to recreate the app that you just saw. So, I've got a bunch of components here. I've got a button, I've got an image library, and I've got a camera. So, you can see that I can drag this stuff onto the phone. I can enable my camera. And then there's me.
And this is as if it were actually being edited on the phone.
And so I'm going to just put down a couple of these on this platform here. And I'm going to say, let's make this button, is this good? Yeah, OK, awesome. So I'm going to make this button the take a picture button. And I'm going to make this button the create GIF button. And so what I can do is I can connect these. So I can say whenever I push this button, I want to connect it to the camera so that when I click this button, it takes a picture. I'm going to connect those. And whenever I take a picture, I want to store it in my image library. So I'm going to select those things from this sentence builder that I have here. And so when I do that, if I click this button, then it stores the image in that image library, which is interesting. So if I do a little bit of a dance, and then I connect this create GIF button to the image library, and I say create a GIF whenever I click that button, and store that GIF in a place where I can see it, and I connect those. Then when I press play, I should soon see an animated GIF when it stops compiling, which is right now. And there's my dance. So it's pretty easy to create an animated GIF.
Do you want to create an animated GIF? Do you want to create an animated GIF of the audience?
Yeah, I think we should attempt that.
All right.
So I'm going
to... So everybody get ready to make a wave or do either that or the Harlem Shuffle. Everybody practice your Harlem Shuffle while you're in here. See, I'm like full of dead internet memes.
Okay, so I'm just going to wire this up so that I can clear what we already did. Mm-hmm. And let's connect this guy. So now when I click this button, I'm back to normal.
Okay, let's turn the camera around.
Let's see if I can do this.
Okay.
So
here, can we go closer to the front where we actually see everybody? I'll hold it and you press the buttons. All right. Everybody ready to, okay, like do a wave or a Harlem shake. Okay. Go. Jump up and down, guys. Yeah. Keep doing it. That's not Harlem shake enough. All right. Do we have it as a GIF yet?
It's coming.
It's compiling.
GIF.
Yeah. There you are.
Very nicely done.
Give Bobby the Doug Engelbart Demo Award. All right, so let's go back to the presentation. So there's Emily doing her dance from breakfast. So you get the idea that what Mozilla is calling out is, yes, we need to beat or transform the iPhone and the Android by getting Firefox OS out there. And yes, we believe, and hopefully we can convince you to get involved, that we need to teach the world how to code. And not just how to code. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. We're building this web literacy standard, which is, you know, understanding how to share, understanding what hacking looks like, understanding how to know what's bullshit, understanding your privacy. It's a lot of stuff that we all take for granted as skills we bring into our digital lives every day that we truly believe we need to and can teach to hundreds of millions of people. So we're going to make a phone, going to make the world web literate, but a part of that has to be bringing those two things together. And so this is the first time I'm sort of saying this out loud on stage, and because it really is very exploratory, is that where we're at now is both on that teach the web mission and on that rolling Firefox OS out to the market. By late 2013, we want to take some of the stuff that Bobby and Ben showed you, which again, they've just been playing with for the last 5 weeks. If any of it is intriguing, it's still very much a sandbox, but if you're interested in those questions, like, come and talk to Bobby at the end and like get involved, because we're just going to be diving into that more and more over the next 6 months. And hopefully, by the time we come back to Fizzly next year, what we can show is really something you can go, yeah, I saw that bullshit last year, but now I can see how these guys are on a path to democratizing how app development can happen for the planet. And by that I mean that it really should be that a shopkeeper who right now may decide that the way they put themselves online is a Facebook page is able to make a web app and get people to come and order from their shop or show up. And even if they're just sending that out to 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people in their neighborhood, it's that long tail of creators of apps and content on the web which made the internet so powerful in the first place. Right? It's the billion web pages that only 5 people saw and not Facebook that actually makes it the web as rich as it has become. And we need that in the mobile world as well. So hopefully next year we'll actually be able to convince you that we're on that path. And the one last thing I'll say before wrapping up is a critical part of that is not just going to be the platform teaching people how to create apps and then giving them tools for that. It's also going to be, and I can't even spell the word here, is that I can text you an app, email you an app, get you an app without asking the permission of the people who run the Apple App Store, the Google App Store, or even the Mozilla App Store. And that's the world that we need to get back to, and that's the world that I want us all here to start to envision and build. And I don't know how we all get there, but I talked about a few pieces. Now, here's one way that we can all get involved in doing this, and then we're going to give away a phone. How much more time? Oh, we got lots of time to talk about this and give away a phone. The thing I said at the beginning is a thing I truly believe, and everybody I think in the leadership of Mozilla right now truly believes is at the heart of who we are and how we win back the web. And that is community and the grassroots and new ideas is absolutely central to where we're going to need to go. I lost my clicker somewhere along the way. Oh, there it is, right in my pocket. And so these are some of our Brazilian community members as well as some costumes, as we said before. And, you know, that community spirit is something that we're taking now beyond code. And you could guess this when I talked about the webmaker stuff. It's not just a set of online tools. In fact, the online tools are not the most important piece. The other piece is we're calling people out, say, let's teach the web to each other. And it doesn't have to be complicated, and you don't have to be a genius teacher or a genius programmer to do it. And so the other part of webmaker is this teach the web kind of mentor, grassroots mentoring area. And as a part of that, we're actually doing something right now called the Maker Party 2013, where we're just inviting people to do small events to show some other people something about how the web works, teach them something. So it could be that you're going to just, And that can be in a, you know, just around a kitchen table, or can it be an event like this Maker Party in Taiwan that Mozilla Taiwan put on? It doesn't have to be a high bar. It's just going and showing some people how the web works, getting them excited, and then maybe getting them to teach somebody something else. We really believe that has to be the core to the movement we're building to rebuild the web. And if you go back to that site for a second, there's all kinds of how-to guides that say, here's what you might do with two or three people. Here's what you might do with some novice people. Here's what you might do with some kids who like video. Here's what you might do in your university. And so that's what that Teach the Web section is of the website is about. And it can be a very simple event. And you can just, you know, you can use the tools that are there on WebMaker. You could teach something about just hacking HTML and how that works. You could be teaching cool stuff with video with Popcorn Maker. You could be trying out some of this app stuff. Or you could be using Hackety Hack. Or you could be using Scratch. Or you could be teaching people Firefox OS app development. The point is, it's not about any particular tools. It's about really building the spirit, as we had, you know, I think a while back in things like bar camps, that just getting together and hacking and having fun with this stuff, but bringing along some people who don't know as much as you is one of the most powerful things you can do to spread the culture that we all believe in. Just talking to geeks, fun, not enough. And so the Maker Party thing is encouraging people to go out and just do these events. And you know, it sounds like maybe a very small thing, but the one place I want to kind of leave you as, yeah, we actually could change the world this way, is to look at the scouting movement. Whether you like it or not, it tells us that we can achieve what I'm talking about, which is winning in the market with these phones, teaching hundreds of millions of people how the web works, and doing it from the grassroots. Those are the things I'm saying we need to do. And if you look at scouting, it actually, you know, has done that at that scale in the last 100 years. And I'll ask one last question of the audience is, what do you think is the major innovation that scouting brought from the arcane into the mainstream? Any guesses? Somebody has to guess, even if you guess wrong. Building fires, that's good. Yeah, I think it's probably less mainstream than it was 100 years ago. Anything else? One more guess. I'm not going to stop until somebody guesses. Closer. All right. The phone doesn't go to you, but I'll buy you a beer. So what he said was building tents. And the answer is civilian camping. So 100 years ago, the only people who camped were really in the military or were prospectors. It didn't exist as an activity outside of an arcane profession. And it was actually hard. It was heavy equipment, had to know how to put it together. Nobody in a city would camp. But how many people here have ever gone camping? Right? And it now is, whether you like it or not, I used to like it, I like it less, it is a really mainstream, wonderful activity that gives people joy, that connects them to the environment, that connects them to their families. And so that was actually the social mission of scouting, was to connect urban young people to nature. And they you know, did it in a lot of different ways, but I think they clearly achieved at a pretty massive scale. And in doing so, shaped a whole aspect of our recreational lives as society. And still today, and this is a big scouting jamboree, still today there's 40 million scouts and guides in the world. So, you know, it seems a little bit like an outdated movement, but it achieved its mission of connecting urban young people to nature. It shaped how society thinks about recreation and about the environment, and it's still 40 million people strong. And so when I think about what the free software movement has to offer to the world and think about where we need to be in 100 years, when I think about where Mozilla could be in 100 years and what we have to offer the world, I think that's not a bad thing to think that we can be. And that's a very difficult thing for companies to beat and governments to beat if we want to keep this digital society as free as we want to keep it. And so my proposal, whether you want to call it Mozilla or freedom, this, that, and the other, is that we need to take that and make it as big and as grassroots and as impactful, as global, as something like scouting. And that where it starts is actually right here with people you know. That these are people who are the pioneers in that. You are all the pioneers in that. And I think thinking of ourselves as that, not just as people who are playing with computers or working on a kind of a small project, but as a part of a global movement, is absolutely essential to building freedom into the future. And with that in mind, not only will I give out a phone momentarily, but I will say there's not a lot of maker parties yet on the Brazilian part of the map. And so my one call to action is Ben Moskowitz will stand up, and Bobby's there, and I'm there. If you're interested in saying, hey, I just would love to do something and find out a little bit more of that, come talk to us, propose an event, even if it's just you and your friends having pizza, playing with Firefox OS, playing with some of these video popcorn stuff with kids. We really do want to get people testing this concept out and seeing how we really build some momentum of this idea of teaching the web to the world. And with that, I will say thank you and get involved. And now, where are my special guests? We need 3 more minutes to hand out a phone, and if there's time for questions, which I doubt, but hold on, before your questions, where are my phone giver outers? Hello? Is there a fox in the room? Oh, here we go. There's a Fabrizio. Where's...
Oi. A gente está aqui para anunciar rapidinho o resultado de uma hackathon que estava rolando esses 3 dias aí. Primeiro, agradecer a todo mundo que participou e todo mundo que foi na sala tirar dúvida e conhecer o Firefox OS. Eu sei que hackathon no Fizzly é um negócio complicado, porque tem muita palestra, muita coisa. Então, essa galera que participou realmente está de parabéns. Não sei se eles vararam em casa, esse tipo de coisa. A gente vai aqui sem mais delongas, porque eu sei que vocês querem fazer pergunta para o Mark. Anunciar os 3 primeiros colocados. De novo, muito obrigado. E falar um pouco sobre... tem dois kits aqui, porque um dos ganhadores a gente teve que entregar antes, que ele estava numa caravana e teve que vazar. O kit vem algumas coisinhas do Firefox, e tem um direito a um e-book também da Kaelo, caso o código. É isso? Quer falar alguma coisa?
Bom, agradecendo, que nem o usuário já estava, e dizer então que o primeiro colocado, tá, fora o kit, tem um Kion ali, esperando por ele, e eu acho que já podemos anunciar então, né?
É isso aí. Bom, o terceiro colocado foi João Carlos Tosta, não sei se ele está aqui ou não. Aê, parabéns. Pode subir no palco. Não, o terceiro. O segundo foi o Adilson Pereira, ele é o que teve que sair mais cedo. E o grande vencedor foi o Lauro Schuck, com a app Stumble dele. Ele não está aqui não, né? Ah, tá sim. Pode subir. Ah, sim. Você acabou de ganhar um telefone de developer. Vai poder testar sua app na sua casa. Não, valeu mesmo. E a gente continua na sala 408 fazendo esse tira dúvidas. 708. E é isso aí. Às 5 tem uma palestra sobre Sumo também. Agora, perguntas.
Oh, I'm going to talk now. So, and is the final one still
Hi.
Coming? Or do we...
Hi.
Where's the third?
No, the second one, he had to left early.
Oh, there you go. Watching Fabrizio and I negotiate is all part of the show. Oh, yes, that's why I was confused. Oh, this is my phone. Congratulations. Round of applause. Oh, wait, come here. Everybody. All right. Woo!
O hackathon ele foi organizado pelo André. O André Garcia, ele não está hoje aqui conosco. Ele teve alguns problemas, então eu gostaria de deixar o nosso muito obrigado para ele.
And thank you, everybody. There's not time for questions, but I'm around if people want to chat. And also, Bobby is there and Ben is there if you want to get involved in the WebMaker stuff we're doing. Thank you to the Fox always. Little round of applause. And let's all build the web into our phones, into our lives, and teach how it works. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.